I think it's a healthy thing to have one thing you can look at and say, like, even on a daily basis, like, is this a good day? Or do I need to get into the whiskey early?
Welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey as self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to episode 99 of Rogue Startups. Mr. Craig, how the heck are you today?
I've had better days and I've had worse days, but today's it's not boring, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, you want to tell the audience what the hell happened to your poor computer today?
I don't know. So we're on the last day of our vacation of like 2 weeks, and my computer was working fine this morning. I went down to like the coffee shop to do some work. Wasn't connecting to internet. Restarted the computer. And just got like the spinner of death, where it just like kept spinning and spinning, and my computer just never booted up. So like, you know, 2 hours of Googling on my phone and trying to go into recovery mode and safe mode and all this. And at the end of the day, here I am podcasting on my iPhone with my Apple earbuds. So apologies to all the listeners in advance if this sounds like I'm in a tin can, but this is what we got this week.
Yeah, which means I'm also recording on this end here, so now we're dependent on my shitty Wi-Fi and DSL to make it all happen. So,
That's right. No pressure, Dave.
Our top quality infrastructure is now being tested.
That's right. That's right. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. Just, you know, still juggling little bits here and there. I got some great news, actually, from my new Recapture developer. He got a whole QA environment set up, and he gave me all the credentials and everything to go check it out and test it out. And it wasn't just like he set up a server, but he set up a Magento 1 store and a Magento 2 store and a continuous integration server and the actual server where we deploy our stuff, which is actually three different instances that are deployed all on a single machine. I mean, yeah, this guy's on fire, so I'm excited.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Did you have like a bunch of unit tests written beforehand, or is he doing some of that as part of this?
You would think that unit tests are an important thing to a development project, wouldn't you? No unit tests.
I'm just laughing because we have zero.
Yeah.
We have literally zero.
That was one of the questions I asked the founders when I bought the thing, and they're like, yeah, we think unit tests are important. We didn't do any, but we think they're important. It's like, yeah, everybody puts their money where their mouth is. It's like, nobody wants to spend the time on it because they just want to power through it and get it done. And then either you're strapped with this big ass project going through and writing unit tests after the fact, or somebody's super diligent and does it up front. So yeah, I think we're in the first bucket, not the second one.
So, you know, I talked to the guys at Teamwork about this last week a bit, just sort of generally. And they said it's like this big internal discussion for a lot of companies, I guess. Like, some people are very, very test-driven and some people aren't. Facebook evidently has almost no tests. I didn't realize this, but they're like some of the highest output development teams out there. But they said that basically what it comes down to is you want to have tests around, like, the things that can like entirely break the core of your app and nothing else, because it's just a waste of time and money.
I could see that. That would actually be super valuable. So like, for example, make sure that your login flow is flawless and make sure like your payment flow is flawless. And the other stuff, you know, if there's something that basically is like key or critical to the functionality of what it is you're doing, I could see putting some tests around that. But, you know, making sure that your account settings page has, you know, unit tests, that's not feeling super valuable by comparison. So
yeah, so sending emails for you would be helpful, but all the shit around DKIM and all those things probably for you are not worth unit testing.
It's Yeah, there's some crazy ass shit in there. And but you know, that's the weird thing is that's not even a unit test anymore. When you're talking about sending email, that's an integration test, because now it's your software interfacing to another system to generate some output that then you have to verify somehow. It's like, oh God. you know, stuff like that. It's actually more straightforward and simple to have us go through and do a general smoke test when we do a release, just to make sure that shit didn't, you know, go sideways. And then call it good until a customer comes in and says, you know, I was doing this and the custom email template thing doesn't work right. That's a much better use of our time at this point, for sure.
Yep, I hear you. Yeah. I hear you.
So what are we talking about today? On the anniversary of our 100th episode, big extravaganza here, what is going to eclipse that episode completely?
So, yeah, it was the night before episode 100, and... Yeah, I thought on the heels of our last discussion talking about churn that an interesting thing to talk about would be some other SaaS benchmarks. So I think some of the shows that we all listen to, Startups for the Rest of Us, Bootstrap Web, and some of these other Startup Chat with Stellian Heaton have talked about a lot of these in different places, but I thought it'd be interesting for us to pull together a handful or a dozen of metrics that you probably should pay attention to and give some kind of thoughts and guidance and rules of thumbs around what is, quote, good and bad for us to kind of shoot for with these SaaS benchmarks.
Yeah, that's great. So shall we jump right on into that?
Yeah, so I thought we'd kind of run through it from, like, the perspective of, like, how the business runs. So, like, the first thing would be, someone comes to your website and the metric there is what is the like unique visitor to trial conversion ratio, right? There's probably a bunch of ways to call that, but that's probably about what I would call it, unique visitor instead of like page views in Google Analytics.
Yeah, I hear so it unique called visitors. Visitor to trial is what most people I hear talk about it refer to it. So visitor to trial rate.
Yeah, cool. And so I'll throw out a number there, and this is based on our kind of limited experience, something like 1% maybe of our website visits equate to trials. I have a hard time attributing that directly because we have things like knowledge-based and blog posts and things like that. But above 1% maybe we'll say is something that you could shoot for. I don't know. Does that sound like a reasonable number?
Yeah, so I had to go look this up because I knew at some point I had a bunch of these things that Rob Walling had talked about from his MicroConf 2015 talk. And this was stuff that was just ranges that he had either from guys that were in his mastermind or Hittail/Drip, like just the general ranges that everybody was talking about. So he was saying that the visitor to trial, like in an ideal world, you're looking at anywhere from 0.7% to about 2%. So 1% is definitely smack dab in the middle of that fat range right there. So in Rob, we'll call them Rob's metrics there, Rob's ranges, that definitely is a positive place. And I can tell you recaptures is not that high, but I also don't have a ton of organic traffic. So that's my main problem right now is trying to generate more traffic because – you know, if you have a visitor to trial rate of 1%, that means every 100 customers that comes to your site, you get one of them to sign up for a trial. That's pretty low. So, you know, it's a numbers game and you got to get a lot of people. And I'm just not getting tons and tons of trials because I don't have tons and tons of traffic. So that's tough right now. So just trying to scare up top of the funnel to increase general traffic to recapture right now is where I'm at.
I would kind of put a couple of asterisks next to this. One is we get a bunch of really high intent traffic from WordPress.org and the plugin itself installed on someone's website on someone's WordPress install. So when they come to our site, they're going to sign up, no questions asked, right? Because they've seen the copy and the video and the pricing is all within WordPress for them. They come and sign up for Sirius Accessible Hosting, kind of automatically. The other thing is we have a pretty fair amount of content around like help articles on our site. We probably have 70 help desk articles on our site. So I would say those are like negative traffic indicators towards potential new trials, right? Because those people probably already are users. So when we look at, like, we get a few thousand visits a month, almost none of those visits are people who could become new users because they're already users. If that makes sense.
That's right.
Some of those are free and not ever going to be paid. But anyway, just things to think about when you're running your numbers is how much content you have. Is a lot of the content on your site for free or existing paid users? Just kind of things to think about, I guess.
Yeah, and one of the things about having highly qualified traffic comes in that's coming in is that whatever you've got to nudge them off the fence is just going to make that visitor to trial ratio go up. So in your case, yeah, having a highly qualified stream of traffic from WordPress.org is even actually better than, say, organic traffic. I mean, I've looked at the rates between WordPress.org and organic on the plugins, and WordPress.org traffic is much higher converting. It just, you know, people are searching for stuff inside of the plugin dashboard, like the where they're at in the, quote, buyer's journey is just much farther along than somebody who's Googling about directory plugins, for example, because they're actually searching for it right then and there on their dashboard, trying to find something to install on their site right then and there. So I always saw much higher conversion rates coming through WordPress.org-based traffic. So
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, so then once someone's there, they sign up for a trial, whether it be credit card up front or not, then the next thing is trial to paid conversion ratio. And I think it's worth talking through kind of the when to get someone's credit card dynamic at this point, right?
Well, that's the great debate. I mean, I've talked to a number of guys. Like, it seems like every year I go to MicroConf, I have a discussion with Ruben from BidSketch about this. And for like the first 3 years that I would meet Ruben at MicroConf, he kept flip-flopping on this back and forth. First he was like, nope, don't do it. Next year, yep, do it. Came back the following year, nope, don't do it. And each time he had like a very solid reason behind it. And he ran tests and he showed some data about it. And it just made sense. Each time he was sort of in a different stage of his overall SaaS growth for BidSketch. So he kept shifting it around. And, of course, you talk to other people about whether they take credit cards up front or not take credit cards up front. Everybody does it a little bit differently. I still don't feel like there's one ironclad rule that says do this and you'll absolutely get the best possible trial to paid rates here. I'm still not convinced of that. Now, in Recapture right now, I actually don't take a credit card up front. At the end of 14 days, we basically just sort of, you know, shut the trial off and send them some emails and say, hey, if you want to keep going, let us know. So this is an experiment that I have on my list of things I want to try. Haven't changed it yet because what I have to do is I have to put some more code in to make it so that when they sign up, one of the things they add right there is their credit card. It will be interesting to see how that actually changes your trials because, of course, when you're shifting back and forth, if you do the credit card up front, you get fewer trials, but the theory is they're more serious. And if you flip it around, then you get, you know, no credit card up front, you get more trials, but then you have more tire kickers, and then at the end, when you ask them to buy, you don't get as many. So where does Seriously Simple Podcasting sit on that?
Yeah, so we have always 3 months, we require a credit card up front to start your 14-day trial. And my thought around it, and I would say there's a couple rules of thumb that I would apply to this, and this is how we kind of came to this conclusion, is at the beginning, because service is something that you don't have a ton of time or resources or money to put towards for non-paying users, that a credit card up front makes more sense when you're just starting than later, all other things being equal. And so that's why we chose to get credit card up front, because now we're converting what I would think is a really high number of our trials, like well above half. And so I think that's good. The other thing I would say, though, is when you're going through this thought process, and Dave, I think it's an interesting one for you. I've heard Jordan talk about it with Carthook and their checkout thing for Shopify, is if you can put the credit card form timing once they've gotten value, but before they can really extract that value, then that's like where you should put it. So for you, it might be like, they've sent the emails and they're recovering revenue could be free, so they're really hooked on the value of recapture, but then and then ask for, you know, the money, the payment before they can get the money or something like that would be interesting, I think.
Well, it's not like we hold the money. It's not like we're the middleman, because that would be a whole, that would be a very different dynamic. We actually are keeping your store hostage here, and I can just see that people wouldn't be signing up for recapture at that point. Yeah, we're the pirate abandonment cart tool.
So that's a bad example, but that would be like ideal. Something like, you know, that people are gonna pay you more money. Just sign up and enter your credit card here.
Yeah, like I could see, for example, if I would set up this trigger, I think that it would actually probably be like the right point to ask for the credit card. So let's say it was the first $200 that they recovered, which is basically above the price of any single one of my tiers right now. So it would be sort of like, here is your immediate no-brainer moment, you know, and then maybe further highlight the fact, this just happened in 3 days. Like, you just created this 3 days ago and you got $200. Think about what happens if you do this for the entire month. Like, you know, get them to sort of dream about what they could actually have here if they stayed with you all that whole time. So it seems like that could be like the perfect trigger. But again, that's going to require some code and then me send, you know, basically an event to Drip that would throw something out and, you know, say, here's your success, trial success campaign, whatever it is, you know.
Yeah, that's the other reason we asked for the card up front, is the technology of a free trial and deleting the account and all that is very complicated. Ours is very manual. I go in and delete accounts once a week for people who have failed their trial, just straight in our like PHP dashboard. We don't have any like your trial failed and so it automatically cancels your Stripe account and deletes your data or anything like that. So we're very caveman-esque still.
Well, as long as it's not like dragging down huge amounts of your or somebody else's time, I think that's fine for where you're at. But, you know, in the next 3 months, you probably want to automate stuff like that, because it really should be at the end of the trial, certain things just to automatically get shut off, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And so when you were going back through some of those old talks and researching, did you have a trial to paid conversion for without card that is, quote, good?
I don't, because so when Rob was quoting his rules of thumb here, he was talking about credit card up front. And so his trial to paid range was 40 to 60%. Now, I could see that if you're doing it without a card, it's going to be lower. Now, how much lower? I don't know what that range would be. I'd probably have to, like, go ask him or something like that. 20 to 30% maybe for the no credit card up front. Maybe it's lower than that. I don't know.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would say. Something like 25%. So we'll do some research and put them in the show notes for folks of other articles we've found citing this. But yeah, I would say somewhere around 25%. And then it's just a question of, can you get that many more trials without asking for a credit card than you do if you ask for a credit card up front to make up the difference? So twice as many or something like that.
Right, right.
Cool. So here's the first big vanity metric. So MRR growth percentage. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, the growth percentage, this... Like, having something where you're consistently growing, I think, from month to month is – that's the metric that I'm running by right now, is just trying to grow consistently from month to month. And even that's a struggle for recapture right now, just because I had that top-of-the-funnel problem. But what's the – so, yeah, I know you got this in our notes here, but, like, what's the VC world one? This one just makes me shake my head.
Yeah, right. So some of the literature out there is definitely in the VC world, and they have this thing T2D3, so triple, triple, double, double, double for the first 5 years. And obviously, most of the people listening to this show are not in the VC world and can't put the sort of resources behind development and marketing and sales to pull these kind of numbers. But I think doubling every year for a bootstrapper is pretty reasonable. first year is kind of who knows. But then from there, to think that you can grow, you know, what, like 10% a month is doubling every year. Is that right? Something like that? I don't think that's unreasonable.
If you're in the right market and it's hot, yeah. I mean, if you've got a good channel and you've got an open market and you've got something that is unique and compelling and solves a pain, I think all of that's definitely possible. But that's, I don't know, that's, there's a lot of variables that go into that, and saying you have to double every year is still pretty freaking ridiculous in my opinion. So I think just a healthy growth rate, depending on where you're at in the business and where your market is at too.
Yeah. So for me personally, I have a goal in my head that I want for Seriously Simple Podcasting, and it'll take a couple of years to achieve it. But that's kind of what I'm working towards. I kind of work backwards, say, okay, in a couple of years, I want the business to be doing this. So thus, I have to add, you know, a few $100 a month. So that's about what our goal is, to add a few $100 a month.
For MRR?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I think that's totally reasonable. You know, I had it as a more audacious goal for Recapture to try to double it this year. But that was before I sort of understood the dynamics of the churn and my top of the funnel problem. So looking at that in retrospect, here we are 7 months into the year, I'm not thinking I'm actually going to hit the doubling goal. But if I can continue a positive single-digit percent, you know, I'd like to push it to 10% a month. But, you know, I'm not necessarily seeing that right now. So if I can get consistent monthly growth, even at the single percent level, you're still heading in the right direction, but you're just on that long, slow SaaS ramp of death, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I'm okay with that. I'm in this for the long game. So if I can make that happen, that's going to make me happy. You know, obviously, that's why churn is so important, because every time you lose a customer, you're taking a major hit to that monthly growth rate. So whatever accounts you're getting, that can put a serious damper on your enthusiasm there, for sure. And a couple of months this year it did, so.
Yep, for sure. Cool, so the next one is LTV, so lifetime value of a customer. So obviously, higher is better, but I think, especially when you start talking about paid acquisition, something above $500 is a good goal to go for here. And then we were talking about CAC, customer acquisition cost, so the cost of acquiring a single customer, because then you should be able to spend $400 and something to acquire a customer, and then thus keep putting more and more money into things like content marketing or Facebook ads or whatever it takes to acquire a new customer. Personally, I think that this is difficult to calculate. I don't see this in my Baremetrics dashboard, which makes me think that this is a tough one to calculate. But I mean, I guess you just put your marketing and sales budget over your revenue for a month, and that would be your customer acquisition cost.
Oh, well, CAC, they're never going to calculate that in any of those tools. I was going to say, if they're not showing you your LTV, I'd be surprised, because I know in Price Intelligently, I've got an LTV row that shows up on most of my dashboard things on there. And it's wildly affected by churn. So if you're like in a low number of customers situation, you know, adding more customers pushes your LTV way up, because you're in a low statistical significance area. And if you lose a couple of customers, then all of a sudden your LTV can go way down. And it depends on what, you know, did you lose a long-term customer? Did you lose a short-term customer? You know, the calculations are slightly different, I've noticed, depending on which of those you do. But as long as you're sitting above the $500 range, that at least gives you some options for acquiring new customers there, for sure.
So Baremetrics does give me our LTV, and like you said, with as few customers as we have, it varies wildly when someone cancels. Like it goes in half on the day when someone cancels. So that's kind of interesting. But
yeah, that totally sucks when that happens. The first time I saw my LTV dip, I was like, ah, wait a minute, that's not what I paid for. They showed me all the stats. That wasn't it. What the hell? Yeah, it's very, when you're sub 1,000 customers, you're just so sensitive to any sort of change because of the percentage of your customers that are moving at once. Yeah, it's rough. It's rough.
Yeah. Again, in the VC world, LTV greater than 3 times your customer acquisition cost is kind of a rule they use, or they measure it by the number of months to recover CAC. And I said less than 6, but it really should be less than 1, right?
Ideally, you want it, you know, either your lifetime value is so high that picking up a customer, even at a high cost, just immediately pushes you back into the black. So if you're charging a lot for a service and it has a high monthly value and you know that the customer stays around for a long time, your LTV is going to be pretty high for that. And, you know, if you're acquiring them cheaply with Facebook ads, then, you know, you're basically printing money at that point. But if it's the flip side and you're trying to do like the $9 a month customer and, you know, it's costing you $4 in AdWords to get this person there, you know, you're in a whole different economics ballgame. You might still be making some money there, but it's a lot harder. And, you know, these customers are probably going to be a little more sensitive to churn and, you know, just lower price customers, not as high quality. And that makes a huge difference on both LTV and your churn rates. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as we're getting into marketing, actively marketing Seriously Simple Podcasting more, I know that churn will go up. Our conversion, trial to paid conversion rate will go down. And obviously, we'll have to start thinking about this LTV to CAC ratio and making sure that the money and the time that we're spending is spent wisely. So a lot of marketing attribution work, I think, is in the future for us because we don't have any right now. But, I mean, in truth, it's tough really to know, I think, where your customers are coming from. But the better idea you can have, the better that – and I'm kind of telling myself this, but the better that you can kind of look at the work you're doing and say, this definitely works or this doesn't work. So things like UTM parameters and Facebook pixels become really important.
Yep. So we talked about churn at great length from the last episode here, but just sort of to recap, the standard-ish statistics for churn, you know, everybody talks about having less than 5% for user and revenue churn. The rules of thumb that I wrote down from Rob are a little bit different. So he splits it up into really two buckets for churn. And I think this is actually, it makes more sense because you have one group of customers. Those are the ones that are like brand new to your product or service. And they're coming in for like 60 or 90 days. And a chunk of them want to stay. And a good chunk of them might be like trying out your service and going, eh, you know, this isn't really for me. So you're going to naturally have a higher churn rate in that first 60 to 90 day cohort. So you got to expect that your churn rate's going to be considerably higher than your long-term churn. So the ranges that Rob actually gave on this one were like 20 to 40% in your first 3 months, which is, you know, eye-poppingly high. But if you're doing a ton and ton of acquisition, it's definitely going to move a lot more. Now, once you're past that 60 or 90 day, and whether that's 60 or 90 days for you depends very much on how quickly users capture their value. So if it takes a little bit longer, then you're looking at the 90 window. If you get it sooner, then it's more maybe 30 or 60, whatever. But the post 60 to 90 day churn window should be in the 4 to 7% per month range, which, as we talked about last time, is still going to mean that you're churning over, you know, if you're at 7%, that's almost 100% of your customers in a year. So you, the lower you can get that churn, the more people you keep around to your service and the less you're going to cap your growth overall. So that's something to pay attention to.
Yeah, no, this is particularly timely. So fellow guest or former guest on the show, Tyler Tringas, MicroConf attended this year, I think. Did you meet Tyler at MicroConf, Dave?
I didn't get a chance to meet Tyler, which is unfortunate, but, you know, that's sort of the way it goes at MicroConf.
Yeah. So he's been writing this micro SaaS ebook and kind of releasing it live on his website as a series of blog posts for the last handful of months. And actually today he had one all about churn. And he says one of the biggest things that's allowed StoreMapper, his SaaS, to be so successful is they have like 1 or 2% churn. And I think it's the kind of product where once you get it set up, it's like really tough and difficult and annoying to move off of. But yeah, I mean, 1 or 2% is wonderful because then you can go spend a lot of money to acquire new customers, and those customers have a high LTV because they're around for so long. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think if we as bootstrappers do it right, that 1 or 2% is unachievable. And certainly Tyler is seeing that with his tool. So that's 5% is great. A lot lower is a huge win. I think it makes the rest of building a business easier.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember who said this, but the term for that when you have such a low churn rate is like a sticky product, one that just keeps them from leaving you because of maybe it's a pain in the ass to change, like it's web hosting, for example. They typically have low churn rates post 60 to 90 days, but the first 60 to 90, they typically have a lot higher. Certain services, like my guess is that if you're using certain email service providers, so MailChimp, ConvertKit, Drip, you know, once you've kind of locked into that, you're probably not likely to move to that. So my guess is their post 60 to 90 day churn in all cases is probably sub 4%. Yeah, so stuff like that. But I just can't remember who said it. It was called a sticky product.
Sounds like Patrick McKenzie-ism to me, but...
I was going to say Heat and Shaw.
Okay, yeah.
Could be either. Who knows? Yeah.
Yep. So I went back last week. I don't know if you listened to our episode from last week, Dave. I went back and recorded a little snippet about the quick ratio. So this is the ratio that the SaaS metric guys talk about with how efficient you are at growing your business and your revenue. And so the numbers to look for here are like greater than 4 for a quick ratio. And this is like new MRR plus expansion MRR over churn MRR, basically. And contraction MRR is so a ratio greater than 4 is awesome. Between 2 and 4 is kind of okay, and below 2 is kind of you're in trouble. So you're inefficiently growing. I mean, you have a lot of revenue growth, but you also have a lot of churn and contraction. So this is not something I've looked at for our business yet. But those are kind of the benchmarks that they're looking at.
Yeah, so I haven't looked at it across, a 7-month window, but on any given month, the months that I had high churn, I could tell you that ratio was 1 or maybe even less than 1 in some cases, which is bad. That's definitely bad. So you got a month of high churn and it throws it all out of whack.
Yeah, for sure. So the last one is, so this actually came up in a Slack group that I'm part of a couple weeks ago, but the idea of like a North Star metric or the popular book from a couple of years ago, like the one thing. So like, what is the one thing? It doesn't have to be revenue based. I know for AppSumo, it's number of new email signups in a day is their kind of like their one thing or their North Star metric. So like the one thing that is an overall indicator of the health and kind of direction of your business. Again, it doesn't have to be revenue or financial based. It could be new trials or new email signups or whatever it is. But I think it's a healthy thing to have one thing you can look at and say, like, even on a daily basis, like, is this a good day? Or do I need to get into the whiskey early? So I don't know. I don't know that we've defined ours yet, but this is interesting to think about.
Well, I've had other people that were discussing this on Twitter, and so it sort of made me stop and think, all right, well, what's my North Star metric? And the truth is right now I feel like I keep switching back and forth between North Star metrics. And I sort of look on a 30-day time horizon as opposed to a daily metric. I think if you get a significant amount of volume of customers, then you can start looking at daily metrics. But that's a little too – I mean, I just don't have enough data on a daily basis necessarily. But I think at the same time, it's also a little jumpy. So if you're talking about, maybe your Monday is your biggest day of the week, and how does that compare to Saturday? And the fact that, everybody's off on Saturdays and people are not on Mondays, what does that mean for your daily metrics? So even that might be more of like a weekly metric is a better thing in that case. But my goal is to go through and make sure churn is – not getting any higher or staying consistently below the previous month's rate. And that's what I've been trying to do since the churn rate jumped up back in March or April. And that's been, a nice driving factor each month to make sure that keeps me on track to make sure that whatever it is that's making the customers unhappy, that I fix that so that I can make sure that the retention is the absolute best it can possibly be. Because, if I can't keep the ones I've got, growing and adding additional ones here is going to cause me a great deal of pain. So that's been my I guess, temporary North Star metric anyway. I don't think that's going to be forever.
I like that, though. I like that a lot because, I mean, the focusing on low churn means that your product is good and it's solving a really good problem. And then expanding your MRR means that you're acquiring customers effectively and efficiently overall. So I think both those things point towards a really healthy business. I think that's great. It doesn't have to be one thing. You can have your North Stars.
Well, I remember on multiple talks at MicroConf, they always talked about, you know, if you've got a leaky funnel, filling that leaky funnel with more customers will at some point, it's going to the customer in rate and the customer out rate are going to equalize in a way that your business can't grow. So at that point, you're forced to fix your leaky funnel. My takeaway from that was if you can fix your leaky funnel early, you're going to grow faster because you can actually acquire more and keep more in the long run so that your business is doing better overall instead of like just throwing shit against the wall and hoping it sticks.
Cool. So yeah, I would be very interested to hear how some of these metrics and some of the thoughts around these metrics kind of resonate with folks. Drop us a comment below this episode. We'd love to hear from you and kind of how this applies to your business, or if it doesn't, then why not? And yeah, next week we have a very special episode. I'm really excited about it, about sharing all the knowledge that mostly Dave accumulated from a bunch of wonderful guests at MicroConf. So I'm really excited to share that with everybody. I've listened to pretty much the whole episode at this point after putting it together, and it's going to be really awesome. So I'm looking forward to sharing episode 100 with everyone, and we'll see you next week.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.